Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Dun 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 dun. Dun 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 dun.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Valred Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, baddest, and drunkest one of all, BFD. How's it going?
Woo! Woo! It is going fantastic. I mean, how could it be anything but?
Did you know that Deshaun Watson is not the greatest quarterback in the country, not the best quarterback in the NFL right now? Not the best quarterback in his own division, but the greatest quarterback of all time.
The greatest quarterback in the history. In fact, he's even the greatest quarterback in the history of Madden. That's just how good he is.
I think he's the greatest athlete of all time, if you consider every sport, every war that's ever been fought, every human being that's ever graced this earth and put their feet to running, you know.
Truly, truly. I think it's safe to say we're at that level when it comes to Deshaun Watson. I just can't say otherwise at this point.
Yeah, and the title of the show is Little Rocket Man, and I know we're all going to come up with our own nicknames for him as time progresses, but that's 100% what I'm going to call him from now on, is Little Rocket Man. What do you think about that?
Little Rocket Man. I think Kim Jong-un is going to be a little bit jelly.
I think he'll be upset with stealing his fire, which is just like the funniest thing ever, regardless of, you know, sports anyways. But so, we just really are just gloating about Deshaun Watson. I guess to kind of temper things down a little bit, it's kind of like last winter I was really, really happy. And like, I was like, you know, I'm way too happy right now. Life is not this good. So I went and saw Manchester by the Sea by myself. And I was like, oh yeah. That's how life really is. So what does Deshaun Watson do poorly? I guess we'll start off like that.
Yeah, and I think it's a fair question because, believe it or not, he does have some issues. I mean, clearly he's a rookie quarterback in the NFL. So he's got a lot of learning to do. Everything's not natural yet, you know, as far as reading defenses, which he's not being asked to do right now, that he has a tendency to throw off his back foot several times a game. He throws about 3 WTF balls a game, which are a little scary, and one of them got picked off. In fact, the ball that got picked off on Sunday, if it wouldn't have been picked off by the first guy, it would have been picked off by the second guy. It was that bad of a throw that two guys would have gotten it. So he does make mistakes, but he's a rookie, and those are the type of mistakes you expect him to make. He also does not have a big arm, and I know I've seen a lot of comments that, hey, he's got a much bigger arm. When he's allowed to roll up in the pocket and step up and throw with the momentum going down to the field, yes, his arm strength is solid. When you cannot ask him to throw the 15-yard out, though. He just doesn't have that sort of arm strength. So he's going to be somewhat limited in what route tree he can throw, but if that's what you're talking about, that you're taking away, you know, some deep outs, then I think you can handle and process that and move on pretty easily. So he does have some weaknesses. You can see it. I'm just going to hand it off to you at this point.
Yeah, I think, you know, I pretty much agree with all that. I do think the one thing about the arm strength, I guess, is important to know is that, you know, his arm strength isn't that great. It's not going to be that great, but whenever he steps up into throws in the pocket, he has more than actual arm strength. I'm not trying to say that he doesn't have an NFL caliber arm. That's not true, but it's just not going to be the type of arm that, you know, Sean Kizer has. But whenever you talk about Kizer, you talk about a guy who's been very inaccurate to start the year and hasn't shown like the ability to like anticipate receivers being open as well as Watson has, and, you know, those sorts of part of the game. So like, there's always things that come along with it. And we, you know, whenever Bridgewater went up for selection, we talked about a lot too. Like, his arm's not the best, but he does everything else so, so well. And I feel similarly with Watson, except Watson's, you know, more of a faster runner and I guess one more at the college level. And I guess the other thing about arm strength, I think that's important too. Like you mentioned about the out routes. You know, I don't think those routes are that important in this offense when you have, because the majority of the time they're throwing the sideline Hopkins. And so Hopkins can use his arms to get separation. He can box guys out. They can run a lot of curl routes and comebacks and those sorts of things too. Something that's like kind of like 15-yard out routes are me really a part of this offense all that much when you have Hopkins out there. And also good at getting open on those that you can throw that ball, you know, 3 seconds before he turns around, he'll catch it too. So I think they'll kind of mitigate it there in those ways. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's Hopkins. I think the throws that you mentioned is good, especially, you know, his back foot. I do think he kind of gets a little wonky at times. You know, he gets excited. There's some pass rush and he's throwing out of it. But I mean, really overall, like, this is all nitpicky stuff. I mean, he's just been, you know, spectacular and remarkable so far. And you know, everything we said at the beginning, you know, it's not sarcasm. He's just been an incredible quarterback these last two games.
Yeah, we did that whole thing last year with the, you know, Texans being the best team of all time. Yeah, this wasn't that. You know, this is being pretty blown away by a guy who, you know, I didn't expect to be this good this early by any means, any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, we didn't even expect him to be playing at this point of the season because we thought we were going to be stuck with watching the corpse known as Tom Savage at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think whenever we talked earlier this summer, I think I said this maybe after the Seahawks game he would start, after, you know, that game after the bye, or that I thought that we would see Savage for maybe 6 weeks and they may be like, you know, 2-4 before he got tossed in there, but it took exactly 1.5. So, and I guess that kind of brings up this other question for you. You know, like we talked about in the summer, I asked that you and Luke, I guess, and I asked you, but like, let's say like Watson that season where he, you know, threw like 25 touchdowns to 8 interceptions, threw for 3,000 yards and, you know, started 10 games and the Texans didn't make the playoffs. Would you consider that a successful season? We both said yes, of course. And now it's looking like, you know, Houston's 2-2. They really kind of saved their season last week. Watson has, you know, I guess, exceeded all expectations. And he's been remarkable the way the season's gone, except for that first half of Tom Savage. Do you think the season could have gone any better than it has so far?
No, I don't really think so. Because, I mean, you kind of have to toss out the second game of the season because nothing was, you know, we weren't able to change anything with the short week, and it's understandable. Okay, that's understandable. I think we could have been a little bit more imaginative, but the honest truth is that's difficult to do on a 4-day week. So if you're looking at, hey, we did not get embarrassed by the Patriots, and then we blew out the most hated, most awful team of all times, and you got to feel pretty good about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it could have gone any better. I think it's been things are about as good as they could ever be, especially kind of the pessimism we had in the season with their one score record, which is 1-1 right now. The fact that they didn't really get any better on offense, it was all kind of based off the Watson pick. They don't have 2 first-round picks this year. They traded so much to get him and get rid of Osweiler. They didn't improve that much. They're playing a tough schedule. The division's going to be tougher. So all the kind of points to one of those like really rough seasons. And, you know, I think Watson is such a good, you know, example of how much a capable quarterback makes to an offense, how much it changes the team, how much it makes the coach look better, how many more options it gives them. I see the same thing with head coaching too. And like when you see these teams are so much different this year, like you look at the Bills, for example, you see how much better they are. A lot of that's just not having Rex Ryan there anymore. You have like a coach. And so you can just kind of see that, like, you know, a lot of different spots from the league. Same thing in Los Angeles too, is Sean McVay and, you know, Jared Goff going from the worst quarterback in the NFL to like playing like a top 10 one right now. And a lot of that has to do with coaching. So I think we're seeing him right now. And it's like, I thought coming in the draft that Watson was like the most ready to start now quarterback, and he had the highest floor, lowest ceiling, but you know, it surpassed all my expectations that I had, you know, entering the season.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit. Let's talk about some of the assumptions we made going into the season. One of those assumptions was that we were going to see a lot of Tom Savage early in the season because that's what Bill O'Brien wanted. And number two, the bigger assumption that we made is that we are going to continue to see Bill O'Brien trying to run his crappy EP offense. And that has not happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's just weird. Like, it's weird how much it's changed and how much of a better coach he looks too. And we can start talking about scheme and game as it has been for. Like, I don't know who this team at all is right now. And last year and all those years before, it was kind of just that same, you know, inside zone run, throw DeAndre Hopkins a lot, them up to tight ends in the flat when nothing's open, and then just string the other enough plays to have three scoring drives a game, and, you know, vault to the red zone, kick a lot of field goals, choke on your own tongue, try and get to 20 points. And now it's entirely different. And so, BFD, how much credit do you give Bill O'Brien to finally do what he should have done, you know, entering this year, and maybe even – I know that he couldn't run this type of offense without, you know, mobility at quarterback and some of the quarterbacks he's had, but, you know, how much credit do you give him, like, how much praise and how, like, happy are you with Bill O'Brien for the job he's done this year?
Well, first of all, I'm absolutely shocked. I mean, I'm just – have absolutely no doubt. I'm shocked about what I see on the field. I'm shocked what I saw against the Patriots, and even more shocked about what we saw against the Titans. Because this is really and truly a complete and total scheme change. I've seen arguments in the comments that, no, it's not. It's the same ETN offense. No. Okay, absolutely not. It is not the same. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But I want to focus first on the plays that we saw on Sunday, and props to USMCJA, who mentioned it in the comments, that what it seems that happened is that Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson sat down, I'm guessing over a nice tea, maybe a chamomile, and they talked about what plays Deshaun Watson was going to be most comfortable running. And so what you saw is you saw the Clemson Tigers offense in 2016 out on the field Sunday for the Texans, because that's what we saw. We saw jet sweeps. We saw a lot of Ellington coming around the corner. Big Matt and I watched the game together, so keep this in mind as you're listening to the podcast, is you know, watching Ellington come around on the fake jet sweeps until he actually did one. But we saw a college-type offense out there, and that was, to me, the most shocking thing of all, is to see – you know, a triple option. When was the last time you saw a triple option like that? Especially, have you ever seen Bill O'Brien run a triple option ever? And the answer is no. So you have to give full credit to both A, Deshaun Watson, for sitting down with Bill and saying, dude, this is what I'm going to be comfortable running. Let's do this. And Bill O'Brien saying, hey, those really play your strengths. That's a dadgum good idea. I'm going to stop with this. First, you know, the dinosaurs, you know, came to the earth kind of reference on my playbook calling, and I'm just going to let you play some street ball out there. It's been beautiful to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Matt.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, I think everything you said, like, based off that, I just think it's just weird, you know? And I think what's kind of weird thing about, like, a lot of the praise that have gone, it's like, it's kind of a no-brainer. And I think we're seeing what we're doing. Like, we're seeing what Seattle did with Russell Wilson when they drafted him as see what they did with RG3 and they drafted him as a rookie, or they're running an offense that they know well, running plays that, you know, he knows well, and giving him a chance to kind of like step in right away. And it usually works for a year. You know, next year is kind of the question of how can he overcome, you know, the scheme, and, you know, now that teams have a better read on him. It usually doesn't happen in the year. It usually kind of works for an entire season before that sort of thing. And, you know, schematically, like you mentioned, you know, they're running the triple option. They're running a lot of zone read. They've never really ran the outside, the zone read before. They're running a lot more outside zone now. They've done a lot of cool things to, you know, pass protection. A lot of stuff that Carolina did whenever they went to the Super Bowl that year, where they have, you know, two tight ends in the backfield and a split back set, and they're both chipping for the outside route. Some play action plays where they have eight people in blocking and only two receivers out for routes, but the run game is just good enough and Watson's so scary to run that it somehow defense all the way this way and opens things up. And then you're really seeing like them scheme well to open DeAndre Hopkins. Or like if, once you watch like a half of the Texans on the all 22, you can go then once like the third and fourth quarter hits and you can just like see when they're going to go to Hopkins. Like you see the isolation matchup, you see everything this way. You see like a 5-yard cushion, like, oh, here comes the, you know, the comeback right, you know, right here for the first down. Like you just see it. You just know when it's going to come. And it's so, like a lot of these things, some of these things they couldn't do. Amazing what talent can do for coaching and play calling, how much easier it makes it. But a lot of it just kind of, you know, surprised what you mentioned, where it's been a coach that's been so fixated on once it's done, running an offense that he knows so well, rather than, you know, kind of being creative and going outside his comfort zone. And he has, and, you know, I'm very happy about it. We all are very happy. And it's just been awesome to not watch like a league worst offense for the first time since, you know, 2012.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, this is the first time it's been actually exciting to watch the offensive side of the ball in years. I mean, sure, watching, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, hobo QB his way on the field was kind of fun at times. But, you know, watching the Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, quarterback, you know, that was pathetic. I mean, that was really pathetic. And then last year with Brock Osweiler, that was just horrible. I mean, that was just pure torture. Like, even the Geneva conventions are coming out and saying, no, nobody should have to watch Houston Texans offense ever. That's just too mean. So, you know, this is a lot of fun to watch this game. And let's go back to, it's not only is, you know, Bill O'Brien getting away from what his core base scheme is, which is centered around a pocket quarterback, right? His core structure is about Tom Brady and Tom Brady making throws from the pocket. And so when you look at the other quarterbacks he's gotten, you know, Fitzpatrick liked to run a little bit, but that wasn't his specialty. But like Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brian Hoyer, Brock Osweiler, these guys are mostly just pure pocket passers. Sure, you can get them outside of the pocket every once in a while, but especially Brock Osweiler. Dude's a statue. Tom Savage, statue. And so he has changed that offense to where it actually fits Deshaun Watson's strengths rather than trying to force him to be a pocket passer. He's letting them have fun. And the other thing that Watson does that's different, and this is something Bill O'Brien cannot control, which makes it even better, is that on broken plays, Deshaun Watson absolutely creates havoc out there. It's an absolute, mm-hmm. it's a joy to watch the little rocket man running around and avoiding tacklers and then throwing with his head up instead of running every time. The guy is playing quarterback position like he's been doing in the NFL for 10 years.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's just such a big difference because the offensive line still is about the same. The biggest difference was that Mank started against New England. Now Jeff Allen started last week, and the offense was still just as good. But, you know, Savage was sacked 7 times in the first half against Jacksonville, and Watson was sacked 3 times. And now you saw that, you know, Watson was sacked once last game. As soon as Savage comes in last game, he gets sacked immediately. And so there's such a difference there in the ability to turn negative plays, at least neutral plays, to even positive plays that just have been so important. And I think that may be, like, the biggest thing that Watson's brought compared to Savage is just his mobility and pocket maneuverance and his ability to turn those negative plays into, you know, something neutral and, you know, positive, because they weren't going to see that with Savage at all. And I think maybe Savage could have been could be a backup quarterback for a team like Oakland that has a really great offensive line and gives him plenty of time to throw. He can play backyard football because his arms are good enough. Like, you can maybe – and, like, his accuracy can be made up for if he's only starting, like, you know, 2 games for you, not an entire season. But Watson's the complete opposite. It's been really awesome to see. Now, my question for you, you have some jingling going on or something.
My family's trying to call me.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to see Houston do schematically that they aren't doing right now?
Sunday's game was like a dream come true. I saw everything that it seems like I've been asking for the past at least 2.5 years. I saw Lamar Miller on outside zone runs. I saw Lamar Miller getting the ball in space. I saw misdirection from the offense. I saw moving the pocket around to play the strengths of your quarterback. I mean, it was like, if this offense had been here for the past 3 years, 2.5 years, we would be doing a lot more than losing in the playoffs. I mean, this is a legit offense right now with this scheme, all because Bill O'Brien doesn't run his real basic core plan anymore. This is beautiful. We finally are using guys, putting our players in a position to succeed. If you've been listening to podcasts, you probably are tired of me saying those words, but that's what's important. Getting guys the ball on the move, right? Slants, stuff like that. A lot, and then your quarterback, and this is huge. I cannot speak to this enough because this is one of the things as I've gotten older, it's become increasingly important. Your quarterback has to be willing to throw the ball down the field. And Deshaun Watson's willing to do that. Brian Hoyer wasn't. Tom Savage most certainly was not willing to do that. So he's willing to push the ball downfield, and you see that on plays like the Ellington catch, which I just blew my favorite Watson play of the game if we were going to do that question. But it's that stepping up into the pocket, pushing the ball downfield to Ryan Griffin for the touchdown. This is a big deal. And this is not; these are not throws that a rookie quarterback normally makes. And Watson's starting to get into an art form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you said that Ellington play was your favorite play last week's game. What did you like so much about it?
It was an extremely mature play by Watson to me, because that's the sort of there's several factors that go in. I'm going to pick my favorite three, but it's the number one, the pocket was breaking down. He stepped up into the pocket, and he did not put his head down to run. He had the field was wide open in front of him. I mean, he had an easy 10-yard run if he decided to do that. He did not. He threw the ball down the field. Not only did he throw the ball down the field, as I keep rambling, he pushed it to a guy that was 25 yards down the field with good momentum by stepping up into the pocket within the added the arm strength for him to throw a BB with a well-placed pass on it. There was nothing that wasn't just beautiful about that play. The only thing that might have topped off Deshaun Watson's throw, his maturity at quarterback, his throw, the keeping his head up, was the look of Ellington after that catch.
Yeah. And it was great, too, because like, he walked right in the end zone to ride the camera so he could get a good look of it.
It was beautiful. That's, man, there are times when it's time to strut, and that was a time to strut.
Yeah. Mine was that touchdown throw to Will Fuller. One, because I just love Will Fuller, and it was so sad what happened after like the first 3 weeks last year, 4 weeks last year, where he was spectacular, and then they played two safeties deep, and Oswald just became he just pooped his pants every single time he had to throw the ball deep. And so, like, to see Fuller back and have an impact immediately was awesome. Also, like, that throw was just so great, too, where, like, you know, like, ball placement is such an important thing, and just putting the ball exactly where it needs to be. And, like, you know, Fuller's covered, and he throws him open by putting that back shoulder, creating, like, an easy touchdown when the coverage wasn't all that bad. And, I mean, I think just, like, after watching Name Redacted last year, I keep messing that up because I'm really stupid. You know, the two things about him were, like, he was a big old – he was like a giraffe with tape on the bottom of his feet in the pocket, and he was slow. And the same thing was he was too inaccurate to play NFL football. And so now you have Watson here, where you have, like, this, like, nimbly little guy who's just, like, jumping through lasers and stuff and then just putting the ball exactly in the spot needs to go, and it's just been, you know, beautiful. And speaking of Will Fuller, we had a question from Rip Jersey, BFD, and he asked, Will Fuller change the game? And I think he was talking about the KC game, but I guess I'm asking you, like, what impact do you think he had on this one, and what impact do you think he's going to have on, you know, games after and continue throughout the season with him back from his collarbone injury?
Well, I think perhaps, are we looking at him? Is he going to be returning kicks full time? I haven't seen the report on that, but with Tyler Urban out, I wouldn't be surprised if he's returning kicks, which is both good and bad because you don't want your, you know, quote unquote number two receiver to be returning punts, right? And especially one who, you know, just getting back from a broken collarbone. That's not fun. So that's one potential way in which he can change the game. The other way that he can really change the Houston Texans offense is by catching the frickin' ball, right? But again, this goes back to, is if we're seeing such a fundamental change in Bill O'Brien's offense, that it goes from this every yard is a battle to this, we're going to get easy yards and chunks offense that we've seen with the play calling and with the quarterback play and, you know, the Lamar Miller in space and outside zone, then this is the sort of offense that you dream about putting a guy like Will Fuller in, because he's going to get you, not only is he going to get you easy yards on a slant or something else where he's in motion going down the field, but he's going to get you a big chunk of easy yards because he's so freaking fast. So the answer is he could have a substantial impact on this offense. DeAndre Hopkins really is, like, he's, if you look at it this way, DeAndre Hopkins is your Anquan Boldin, and Will Fuller is your Larry Fitzgerald. And you want to get those guys going down the, you know, he's, one's a possession guy, one's going to be the big playmaker. And so there's a lot of excitement about what he can do, Will Fuller can do with the game, given the opportunity. If we keep along this track, this epiphany of offensive scheme, then he's going to do a lot of damage. And so, Rip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think also, too, like, the ability just to, like, pull a safety with you whenever he runs deep downfield is going to create easier underneath throws, too. So, like, whenever a team starts to, you know, actually, you know, blitz and then be able to just play with three defenders back in man coverage, you know, they only do that thing where they only have two routes out there. Just ability to, like, be able to pull two defenders and open things underneath is going to be huge. And I haven't watched the Tennessee video yet. You know, that's part of the thing of having a, you know, full-time job where you don't get to – it's like sitting inside and it's like a rainy day, or like you're grounded and everybody else is having fun outside whenever you're having to work and the all 22 drops. But I think some of those passes, like, you know, Steven Anderson where he's wide open, I think some of it is like zone coverage where they have Will Fuller running deep and it's just creating wide open passes underneath, which I think part of that has to do with him. And then it's a really great point you brought up, too. Like, this offense is creating easy throws. Like, it's creating, like, simple offense, you know, chunks of yards on its own, rather than everything being just such a struggle, you know, easy passes being created too. Now, the other thing about this game specifically, it was kind of a strange game on Tennessee's end. They rushed three for most of it. They never really got any pressure on Watson. They didn't spy him at all, you know, in the pocket to kind of keep him in there, or they have somebody around him whenever he took off out of it. They picked on LeSean Sims a lot, and he was stuck in 1-1 coverage, you know, a lot of times. And also with DeAndre Hopkins, he had 10 catches this game on 13 targets, and he was single covered the entire time. They never changed that whatsoever. Were you surprised by the decisions they made? And was this something like, you know, Dick LeBeau didn't bring in a post-it notes and kind of forgot what he was doing in this one?
Yeah, this game, I really think I see that, you know, I saw a question, you know, what is it going to – are we going to play like this versus the Chiefs? The answer is no. I mean, goodness gracious, you don't put up 57 points every game. But just the entire strategy was terrible defensively for the Titans, and not getting pressure after Watson. I think the fear there is that once he escapes the pocket, he does a lot of damage. Fair enough, but he's also a rookie quarterback. The whole theory about rushing three, maybe they were thinking they were going to get enough pressure against our crappy offensive line. I don't know. I don't get that at all. And so I think you have to give a lot of credit to LeBeau just for having such a crummy scheme in this game, because it really helped us. So thanks a lot, man. Appreciate the love.
Yeah, and that kind of leads to this question from Brian Hoyer, Hall of Fame, where he says, rookie quarterbacks need more playing time. Teams will begin to compile game tape on them and find things to exploit to limit their effectiveness. Based on what you've seen in the last few games, what weaknesses have you seen from Watson you think teams will try to exploit? Do you think the strategy they come up with will be successful? So what happened with Osborne last year, or do you think Watson will be able to overcome it?
One of the things I think I'm seeing, and I want to just put the disclaimer out there, I could be wrong, but what I'm seeing offensively with the scheme changes, I'm seeing a lot more quick reads from Deshaun Watson. He's not really being asked to go to a second or third guy. It's basically, this guy is going to be open because Hopkins is better than Sims. This guy is going to be open because Fuller is going to be faster than whomever's covering him. So I'm not seeing a lot of progression from Watson at this point in time. So I think what the change is with that one is that you see teams play a little bit more pressed man coverage against this. Of course, there's a danger in that as well. When you go into man coverage, you have cornerbacks running with their backs against the quarterback. That allows the quarterback to do damage with his feet. So there are trade-offs there. But what I think we're going to be seeing is, and I think the Chiefs game will be a good example of this, because they do have, well, at least one corner who can do this, is that you're going to see a little bit more press, and you're going to be seeing – they're going to see – I think we're going to see teams make Watson make reads rather than just take two steps back, three steps back, and release the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Matt.
Yeah, and I think one of the things they're doing that too, those quick passes, is that it's kind of like similar in Clemson where Watson's reading, you know, half the field. You know, like before we walk up to the line of scrimmage and he kind of has an idea where he's going to go with the ball based on the pre-snap alignment, and then reads that half. No one makes like one or two reads off of that, so he's not going, you know, 1-2, going back across the field, you know, 3-4, and then find the drop off from there. He, like, you know, whenever he has a longer time in the pocket where he's stepping back longer. And even though all those throws are deeper passes where there's only, you know, two routes out there. But I think that's true, too. And, I think it's going to take more time. And again, I think it's going to be really good for this season at least, because usually that's what you see with these good offenses. Like you saw with Atlanta last year, or you saw with Carolina when they went to the Super Bowl, or like I mentioned, you know, Wilson and Russell Griffin, was that it worked out really, really well for that year. But the next year was whenever things kind of became problems on how teams scheme and attack and, some of that's, you know, regression as well, too, or maybe the quarterback being, you know, limited in some ways, not being able to, you know, get past a certain point, kind of like, you know, transcend the scheme as its own as defenses got better and more used to it. But, I mean, for this year, like, I really, you know, have a lot of confidence in this offense and, you know, being really good. Last thing about Watson before we're done here, for offensive passing DVOA by weeks against Jacksonville, negative 40.3%, Cincinnati 18.3%, New England 32%, against Tennessee it was 61.7%, and I have to go back and look at the numbers, but I don't know if Houston's had a game even close to like 32%, you know, last year at all, and even like, you know, going back the year before that even.
Yeah, I want to throw one more thing in there because I thought you were going to mention it. I was going to let you have that low-hanging fruit. But we've seen really no complication. You know, New England had a really difficult time against Watson. Their defense has been playing extremely poorly. The Titans have an old defense, aside from Adoree Jackson. They're slow on top of that. At some point in time, and I'm really surprised LeBeau didn't do it, you're going to see zone blitzes. You're going to see a lot more complexity on the defensive side to make Watson try to process and make decisions differently. Because right now he is kind of in this just – he's trigger-happy. That he's just – hey, this is my first read. Boom, there goes the ball. Not necessarily a bad thing, but defenses are going to make it more complicated to run that sort of simplified system. And so I think it's just a matter of time before we see teams not only force him to make progressions, as I mentioned kind of the first time around, but also send players from different spots and really, you know, that like our offensive line needs any help to be additionally confused.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I guess also it's important to note, too, that New England has the worst defense in the NFL so far this year. And in Tennessee, like they're defensively, they're 31st in DVOA right now. A big part of that was playing Houston. I believe New England is their 32nd. So, I mean, these are just two of the worst defenses they play. Again, a big part of that is the performance that Houston put against them. But they're not very good defenses. I think Tennessee's is probably ultimately mediocre whenever they're rushing and passer well. But like once you get past, their secondary isn't good. Once you get past Logan Ryan, and, you know, Dory Jackson's been, you know, fun, but he's still young. It takes some time at that position, too. So I know we're very excited. You know, I am, you know, so Brock Hard right now. But the difference is, you know, there's still some things where they haven't played any really good defenses yet, and that's going to change this week really quickly. Anything else offensively? I guess, you know, Lamar Miller looks really good. Steven Anderson looks really good. Hopefully Jeff Allen isn't continuing to start. And this kicker, Kimio Fairburn, is just the greatest kicker of all time, too. Is there anything at all that you want to bring up on these a few points we spent, you know, 30 minutes talking about Watson?
Right. As we should. And one thing that Matt and I were kind of joking about during the game was that it was really just so much fun watching the kickoffs go into the end zone rather than like getting to the 5-yard line and watching our coverage team, like, you know, just suck. You know, Fairbairn gets the ball out of the end zone and Nick Novak is like, you know, trying to blow the ball so it goes to the half yard. It's a lot more fun watching our kickoff team right now than it has been, because you know what? They're not having to really do anything. And in our case, that's a good thing. This is different. When we ragged last year and when we made fun of re-signing, you know, Nick Novak and Shane Leckler, and we talk about these things and we keep putting up the worst special teams units in the league, this is the sort of difference the kicker can make, you know, is that we don't have to worry about the kick return teams anymore. We don't. So we've taken that one out. One of our huge weaknesses out. Now we've got a guy that can kick. You're going to trust him to try 55, 50-yard field goals. You're actually going to give him the opportunity. We'll take Novak, anything beyond 45, you're kind of going, nah. So, and the 50-yard field goal that he hit, what would we say? That would have been good from almost 70. So, you know, this is a big deal. This one change is a really big deal for this football team.
Yeah, and bringing up, you know, the field goal kicks, I was just astounded, like, watching a 50-yard field goal like hit the back of the net instead of just like, you know, seeing him just barely cross the bar. Like it's been forever. And I know we laughed about that on Sunday. It was just like, wow, like that thing could go on, you know, 70 yards, it seems like, in a dome. And it's just so much better to have Nick Novak there. But remember, whenever you have to re-sign the kicker from the worst special teams unit in the NFL, you just, you know, you have to do it. And you know, just what a silly thing. But at least they made the right decision from there and kind of learned their lesson. I guess, you know, kind of GMs get scared whenever they have a hole in their depth chart and they have to try to fill it immediately.
Yeah, it's just funny how much just absolute crap we took for that. Like you could not even criticize the worst special teams unit in the game at all. Like, you just couldn't. It was all like, oh, it's just the return team. But no, return team. But the punter kicking the wrong side of the field, return team. Return coverage team.
Yeah, Covington's been really bad this year also. It all goes hand in hand, but it's a big part of it. Defensively, the Texans start the game, hold the time, said 3-3 and out. Tennessee didn't have a first down to the second quarter. And by that point, Tennessee was already down 21-0. And, you know, we're talking about a team that was second offensive DVOA entering last week that Houston just completely, you know, strangled. And so it was kind of a weird game from Tennessee too, offensively, just kind of like their scheme where Mariota was, you know, off. He had those two high throws, lots of interceptions. One, you know, at the beginning of the game where Andre Howell just completely leaps over the receiver and pulled that one down. And he had another one that was, you know, high as well, too, they picked off. And also it seemed like Tennessee really wanted to stick it to Houston and kind of play that run the ball and slog it out style. And then they went down early and they kind of couldn't do that. And but, like, it was, again, like the parts of the field they were attacking were a lot more of the shorter spots. They weren't getting guys in space. They weren't attacking the secondary. And they're not a super fast team also. I think that's kind of where it's a poor matchup for Houston, where they're going up against another team that's really big and strong on their front seven, and you're not going to have the same matchups they do against you know, other teams that they play in the past. You know, going back to last year and this year too. So do you think it's kind of strange that they didn't attack the Texans secondary early on, or is this just kind of what the Titans are and they're a bad matchup for Houston?
Yeah, they're the exotic meth mouth, right? That was their whole goal, is to run the ball. In the NFL today, 31 teams throw the ball in order to establish the run. The only exception to that rule is the Titans. They run the ball to establish the run so they can pass. And everybody, every announcer gets it backwards. I got it correct. So when they could not do that, when you had DJ Reader and you had Watt and Clowney and all the cleanups being done, they just couldn't get the ball past our front seven at all. And then going down big, so you can't run the ball, right, and then expect to score 21 points after when you're down 21-0. We took them out of their element quickly, and so that ruined their entire game plan. Once we were up 21-0, it was sort of this kind of thing where, wow, this one's done, because I don't see Tennessee being able to come back and do that. So it was fantastic to see. I think this game is a different game if Corey Davis is healthy, because he adds that speed dimension to the Titans that they don't have otherwise. You know, our slow cornerbacks can cover their slow wide receivers. What can you say? You know, Kareem Jackson on Decker is, you know, slow on slow violence. So it was just a favorable matchup in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the biggest thing that really happened in this game was that Marcus Mariota, you know, kind of pinched his hamstring on that touchdown run that he had. And the Tennessee Titans recently picked up Brandon Weeden to play, maybe even back up or play third string quarterback in case something happens, because Matt Castle is just incredibly bad. And, like, if you're a Titans fan, I would be beside myself to have, you know, Mariota, who's been, you know, injured multiple times in his career, who hasn't played a full year yet. And just, like, seeing how bad Matt Castle is, like, he's one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, he shouldn't have a job at all right now, but they just kept him there just to, for the sake of having him there. And I can't believe he's still on that roster. And so they signed Brandon Weeden, who, you know what, made like two throws and one run whenever he started for Houston, helped them win that division in 2015, but he's not a good quarterback too. So BFD, now is Houston the favorites from the AFC South?
I think so. I really do. I mean, a lot of it's going to depend on how long Mariota is out, but it's clear at this point that he's just too big of a part of their – I mean, well, okay. Let's just say that you are a football team in the AFC South and you've been trotting out guys like, I don't know, Ryan Boyer and Rock Oatweiler as your quarterbacks, just as an example, and you see the absolute dumpster fire of a team that offense that creates, and then you're going to throw out Brandon Weeden and Matt Cassell. You think you're going to be any better? And I'm saying no. So depending on how long Mariota's out, that's going to be a big deal. The Jaguars' defense is still going to be very good. That's a team that's going to get better as the year goes on. Losing Robinson hurts, of course, but they're still going to be good. But I think at this point in time, you put it all together and you say, hey, you know, all of a sudden we've gone from Tom Savage to Deshaun Watson. We've gone from a trashy offensive scheme to one that puts players in space. This is a much better-looking team than it was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and even, I guess, like, 2 weeks ago or a week ago. Because even that New England game, like, well, this defense isn't that good. They still lost and a lot of bad decisions. But, I mean, this was just, like, all, like, just such an incredible game. And maybe one of the best regular season games, like, in franchise history even, too. And I think Houston is by far the team to be in the AFC South now. You know, not only Mariota's injury, but, like, they need a quarterback who has some speed and can run to play there. And, so much has been said about Colin Kaepernick, and I think a lot of it is, like, if you want to be a cool NFL fan, you have to say you like Kaepernick. If you want to be a, a conservative NFL fan, you say you don't. It's kind of like – it's weird how it's kind of, like, polarized, watching football. But I think for sure, it'd be a no-brainer for Tennessee to go after someone like Kaepernick who can, have a chance to start there and have some speed – and they'll make some plays happen instead of, signing Brandon Weeden. But, I think for sure that Houston is the favorite to win this division now. And that kind of brings us to this question from Rip Jersey that said, what is the panel's projection for wins this season? And how has it changed since before the season started? And then in the year I said 7-9, 8-8. I thought 7-9 was more likely than 8-8. And again, that goes back to, everything I've wrote and said so many times about just, regression, lack of improvement offense, the fact that Tom Savage is going to be quarterback, the issues up the offensive line about Dwayne Brown. You always think that quickly changed immediately. And now I'm saying that I would put my guess now at 11-5. And one of the biggest reasons why is that they just played the 10th toughest schedule, these first 4 weeks, the DVA of 4.9%. And the rest of the way, then that figure drops down to -7% at 28. So they really kind of flipped their schedule from being one of the toughest in the league to one of the easiest. And you compare that to against Indy, who plays the toughest schedule. Jacksonville and Tennessee play the easiest ones there too. But I think the fact that they turned such a disadvantage into an advantage by going 2-2 to start the year, depending on how they play against Kansas City, and being 3-3, possibly in the bye and having kind of a little bit easier route, I think it's going to be huge. So I think that for the AFC South there right now, I would guess I put them at 11-5 for their actual record in the year. What about you, BFD? How has your projections changed since the first 4 weeks of the year has gone past?
I just want one thing that I want to say that you don't listen to DRR for the politics, but I will say this, is that with the Tennessee baby-eating sister Fiskers of Mesopotamia signing Brandon Weeden over Colin Kaepernick, that just proves they have absolutely no interest in actually winning. I will say that. And thank you for that. Thank you for that extremely poor roster decision. Thank you for that, because you have absolutely ruined the rest of the season as long as Marcus Mariota is out. Well done. I think my original approximation was 10-9. I think that if I sort of think things through, I'd want to probably sit down and write it out, but I think 10-6 is realistic. I mean, I went into the season with Tom Savage playing through the bye week and then Bill O'Brien not changing his system, thinking that this was actually going to be a 5-11 team. And I wrote 7-9 because the defense was going to be that good. Defense hasn't been great, and all of a sudden Deshaun Watson's lightning in a bottle. So I think I'm going to go with 10-6 this year. And this is a team that the defense can get coached up a little bit more. The defense is going to improve as the season goes on. J.J. Watt's going to improve as the season goes on. When these things start to happen, this could be a team that really is a pain in the side if we make the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's weird. I think it's also one of those things that you always hear that, especially in basketball too, I guess in any sport, is that the team that you go in with starting the year is not the team that you're going to have, a month into the season, 2 months in the season, 3 months in the season. And there's so much, I guess, kind of change where injuries happen, you find other players, you understand your team better and your scheme, what you're good and bad at. And Houston's done it immediately, and they've really kind of closed any sort of gap as far as worry's concerned. Defensively, there really wasn't much to see because Tennessee didn't run a whole lot of plays. It was kind of the opposite of usual Houston games where, you watch the defense, you watch the offense. This game was the exact opposite. On the defense side of the ball, there was the Howell interceptions, full overthrows by Mariota. There's a Clowney strip sack of Castle. There's a Dylan Cole pick six. It was kind of a weird game. Did you pick up on anything defensively during this game? Because I really didn't at all.
No, there wasn't a lot to see. I mean, once Marcus Mariota went out, and it was the Matt Cassell experience, I mean, it must be what it was like. If you're trying to analyze your defense after playing the Texans in 2016, it's like, well, but we just played the Texans, But what are you supposed to analyze here? So that's kind of the feeling that I had after watching this game. Mariota hurt us because he's fast. It was I don't know if the word is funny, that on his touchdown run, he absolutely scorched past Kareem Jackson, and then Jada Vion Clowney was actually pretty much keeping pace with Mariota. That was pretty frightening. There wasn't much to see there. We see why. You know, nobody – I think it was Clowney had edge duties on that. He did not set the edge. He fell for the fake on the inside. That's a training moment. That's not something that should happen again. But so there hasn't been a whole lot to see. I just want to say that Andre Howell, that was an amazing performance as a center field safety. That was just amazing. His picks were beautiful. They were both difficult. They were both reading the quarterback's eyes. What a heck of a game. Goodness gracious. We make fun of him because he can't tackle, but, man, he's a good center fielder.
Yeah, and he made fun that he can't tackle. Like, he looks a lot stronger, too, than he has in years past. Like, he has, like, he has Tyrod Taylor, you know, arms now. And he's always been quick. Like, he's always been able to impact the plays from the middle of the field to the sideline. But, you know, like, it's been really cool to see how much better he's been this year. Like, he stripped Gronkowski earlier this year, too. I know he got trucked by him, you know, once or twice, but he looks a whole lot better, and was completely worth that contract extension. Unlike, you know, Fedorowicz and who was the other guy they extended? I can't remember now. But and Pro. So, anyways, let's talk about JJ Watt real fast. Riff Jersey asks, will JJ Watt get double digit sacks this season? Right now, he has zero. He's still rushing from the exterior. He's still having trouble turning that corner, and also when he's rushing on the interior, he's getting held a lot. There was that really great Clinton Spain holding where he just had him around the neck and Watt like, had his arms all the way up and they didn't call anything at all. So I don't know if maybe the referees are tired of him or you know, what's going on there, but it's just kind of funny to see the stuff the offensive linemen have been able to do to get through it. So I guess BFD, since Mike Vrabel hasn't returned your phone calls or sent them back to the news that you sent him and hasn't put JJ Watt in the interior really a whole lot yet, do you think that Watts can be able to break the double-digit sack barrier, and you think he's going to end up, you know, maybe second or third in total sacks on this team this year?
It's hard. I'm really disappointed that we're not doing something different with Watt at this point in time. I think we have a sample size that's big enough that he's not going to be getting around guys at this point. He's had some tough matchups, granted. But it's just this is not going to be his strength. It's time to do something different with him. So I am hopeful that we do something with him. If something can happen on the offensive side of the ball, that we make some changes, then I'm hopeful that we can do that on the defensive side of the ball as well. As of right now, if we keep running him outside and expecting him to loop around tackles, and the Kansas City game is going to be a perfect example of this because they're going to get rid of the ball. So where J.J. Watt has struggled is teams like Kansas City who get rid of the ball quickly. So this could easily be another week that he does not get a sack. So we have to do something with him differently. It's time. Is he going to get double-digit sacks? Not with his current usage. Is it possible J.J. will be second on the team in sacks? Actually, yeah. Because we're going to have a bunch of guys. You know, we're going to have a bunch of guys with like 6, 7, 8 sacks. We're not going to have guys with 15 sacks.
All right, well, let's preview the Kansas City game. They're playing on Sunday night. This Kansas City-Houston rivalry has been kind of strange. One, because you know, they finished the same spot in the division. They both won the division last year, so they get to play each other this weekend. And two, like I guess as far as just a you know SB Nation thing, you know, our Texans side and the Chiefs side has always just led to just like nonstop just, you know, bickering and annoyance. And it's made me, you know, I really like watching the Chiefs play, but just reading through all the stuff that you have to kind of sift through sometimes whenever they play the Chiefs can be not a whole lot of fun. But they're usually, you know, pretty smart fans and they're enjoyable. And I guess it's just I don't really read the comments that much anymore. I know for the Chiefs stuff I'll for sure stay away because it's a lot of you know, dogs chasing their tails around sometimes and the circular arguments, you have two fan bases who love their team so much, you know, kind of arguing. But anyways, this is going to be a lot of fun. The last few times they played, Houston, of course, won week two last year, they beat Kansas City. And of course, they lost them twice the year before that and lost them the year before that. And I believe lost them the year before that. So this should be a lot of fun. And so Kansas City has been the best team in the NFL this year. They've been the most complete team. They have a great offense, a great defense, great special teams. They've beaten, you know, they've won four tough games to start off the year. So how do you think they're going to attack Deshaun Watson? Because we haven't seen New England or, you know, Tennessee, you know, both with teams with not very, one with a really awful defense, one with a, maybe an average defense at best, depending on the weekend. How do you think that Kansas City with a really great defense is going to attack Watson?
I think you're going to see a lot more than just three guys rushing the quarterback. I think not only that, Justin Houston will be the best pass rusher that we face since the Jacksonville game. That's going to be another big deal. Houston was wrecking stuff the other night, just absolutely nightmare wrecking stuff. The Kansas City defense has excellent team speed. That's going to create problems. This is a from a offense, our offense versus their defense matchup, this is going to be a much more problematic. Marcus Peters can play press coverage against DeAndre Hopkins, can limit his touches. Yes, Peters did have a rough night the other night, but he can, you know, but he's still a very good cornerback. They're going to have to go after the other cornerback whose name I'm completely whiffing on. He's a replacement level. Yes. So he's a replacement level guy. You got to pick on him. You got to play away from Peters and pick on the backup. I think the biggest thing for the Chiefs defense right now is that they don't have Eric Berry anymore, one of the best strong safeties in the game. That hurts. But this is – you're not going to see the kind of hands-off defense that we saw on Sunday against Deshaun Watson when we play Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. And the FG, this is a question from J.J. Watts Armbrace. If there was maybe the Chiefs on Sunday, you know, what would it look like? And I guess, you know, offensively specifically.
It's going to kind of a fun thought is that I think the way that we beat the Chiefs is the way that the Chiefs beat other teams, which is using their team speed, using Kareem Hunt, like we can maybe use Lamar Miller, that we Deshaun Watson and Alex Smith are in a lot of ways the same quarterback, except I think Deshaun Watson is more aggressive about getting the ball downfield. Alex Smith,
mm-hmm.
of course, being
he's fast
the
too.
He's one fast dude still.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Smith is. It's shocking. And he's also a very accurate passer. So I think the way that we beat the Chiefs is the way that they beat other teams, is that they get their speed players in the ball quickly, get the ball to them in space, and let them make magic happen. I think that's going to, you know, I think that's how we win.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's me kind of I think it's me just kind of like – it's weird because of how Kansas City's defense is, and then they'll be able to get pressure on Watson is one thing. And then they'll be able to, you know, go to him and bait him into some mistakes. I think Peter is going to swallow up Hopkins pretty well. He's usually, you know, really good in that matchup. So I think it's just going to take a lot of, like, running the ball. I think it's going to be a lot more like wins that were last year where defensively they're getting a lot of pressure. They're creating turnovers. I think you have to put Kansas City in long third downs. They have to tackle well. And I believe that Kansas City game they won last year, there was what the Houston recovered all three fumbles Kansas City had. Kansas City had like three chances to go for it, and they didn't kick field goals, never got a chance to actually come back and win the game. They had Tyreek Hill kickoff return that went back for a touchdown that was overturned because of a penalty. And I was like, who is that guy? And then he just broke out of nowhere that year. And so I think it's got to be such a like a conservative, weird game just because like I'm still like I love Watson. I love this offense right now. Everything's so great. But, like I'm still like not all the way, you know, in completely to just expect that they can continue this against a team like the Chiefs. So it's going to take a little bit more time for this this black and you know, spoiled heart to be, you know, more into that sort of way working. Yeah, the other question I have for you, BFG, is what worries you more in this game? As far as the pass rush goes, is it D4 and Justin Houston against Chris Clark and Brandon Giacomini, or is it Chris Jones on the interior?
Well, and then you have Justin Houston. It's the other big factor there, right? Houston's the one that scares me. It's just because he is just so he's crazy. He's insane. He's a blast to watch. So that's the guy. That's the matchup I worry. D4 is fine. But, yeah, no, No, thank you to Justin Houston. I just wanted to mention one more thing about the game against the Chiefs last year. That game was weird because when they beat us in 2015, they were using the quick hitting stuff to beat us, and they did not do that in 2016. Andy Reid is too dadgum smart to overlook that again. So it's going to be a different game plan this year than what we saw last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty much all I have offensively. You know, this game, I'm just worried. I guess I'm just worried about the line of scrimmage is the biggest thing because Houston. They haven't run the ball well this year, aside from Watson's runs. They've been a little bit better at times. They've had more 7-8 yard runs, but it's still been like a lot of it hasn't been as successful. It's been more something we do to set up other plays, especially with zone reads and that sort of thing too. So I think it's been such a. I'm just kind of worried about the line of scrimmage against Kansas City compared to the other times, and getting Watson longer third downs to be an issue. And it's also a smart defense that knows what they're doing too and has played together for a while. So. That part of the game is going to be a lot of fun. And on defense, it's going to be a lot of fun, too, because Houston's always kind of had a tough matchup against Kansas City because of the speed that they have. I know their front seven's great, and they're great between the tackles, but when you have Tyreek Hill, you have Albert Wilson, you have Chris Conley, you have Kareem Hunt, you have Chicondrick West, you have this without even mentioning Kelsey. There's a lot of speed on this Kansas City Chiefs offense. And I know Kelsey has had some really great games against Houston. What worries you more, offensively? Is it Hill? Is it Hunt? Is it Kelsey? Which weapon do you have? Which weapon does Kansas City have do you think is going to have the biggest game on Sunday?
Well, look, our weakness right now is really team speed. And so when you look at guys like Wilson, Conley, and especially Travis Kelsey with what he's done against us, those three guys alone are a nightmare. Now we throw in Tyreek Hill, and they do a good job of taking advantage of Tyreek Hill's skill set. Yes, he's gotten into a chops. He doesn't exactly know what routes he's running. There are issues there. Get it. But the guy is terrifying. I mean, is there a team in the league that actually has guys to cover Tyreek Hill? I mean, it's not just the Houston Texan thing. It's an NFL thing. So that's anything that has to do with Tyreek Hill, number one, Travis Kelsey, number two, and then Kareem Hunt, number three. And Kareem Hunt has just been a beautiful football player in his first four games.
Yeah, Hill's one of my favorite players to watch already. Kareem Hunt, I should say. And I've thought about running backs the last 2 weeks. I didn't get a chance to write about Watson because I had some social life stuff that that happened. And just having fun during the week. But I wrote about running backs week one and week two. And I think I'm going to write about Hunt maybe on Thursday night. Once I finish something tomorrow night. And, he's just been really great to watch. And one of the things about him and, listening to, I believe it was Arian Foster. There's another running back and they were talking about the positions. This isn't teachable stuff. Guys are just running backs. They aren't running backs. I mean, guys miss having the patience, the vision, it's such a field position. And I think a good, I know whenever I watch, running backs on video, I have to rewind, the really great runs three or four times and they create something, but I have no idea how they saw that, how they let it happening. I think Hunt's such a great example of that. He's just a natural runner. Right now, I think he's on pace for 2,000 yards. He's had the second most yards from scrimmage of any NFL running back in his first four games. And it looks to be him and Watson for the race for the Offensive Rookie of the Year this year. But I think as far as this game goes, I think that Tyreek Hill is going to have the biggest impact because of his speed. I can just already see Kareem Jackson chasing him and Tyreek Hill waving his finger at him as he's just walking into the end zone. And Houston's had problems in the secondary as far as miscommunication and coverages. And with Hill, you can't give him any space. If you don't pass him off correctly, he's gone. And you saw in that touchdown against New England. So I think he's going to be the biggest mismatch for Houston in this game.
Yep, clearly we agree.
And do you think Houston will be able to generate pass rush against Kansas City?
That's a great question because the answer is, do we see the 2015 version of the Kansas City Chiefs offense under Andy Reid where they got rid of the ball quickly and just allowed nothing to happen? I mean, you saw some Clowney, Studley moments, but still, the entire point of the game was to get the ball out. Or are we going to see the 2016 version where it was just a much plottier, slower offense? I really don't see DuVernay-Tardif is hurt, and he's been an outstanding guard the last couple of years. This dude kind of came out of nowhere with his play. I think he is out for this game already. that can make a difference in whether or not we create pressure. If they're fully healthy, I think we're going to have a hard time just because of the play calling. It's going to make it so. So I do not see that we're going to have a whole lot of success getting to the quarterback on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's all going to be about first and second down. If they put Kansas City in third down and, you know, 12 is some sort of thing, they have any sort of lead, they can rush the passer because they have before. I'm really excited to watch everybody against Eric Fisher, because Eric Fisher is one of the most overrated players in the NFL. And he's like, he just like, he's big and he's quick and he gets in the way, but like, he's not a technically good, you know, blocker at all. And he holds it a lot. And that like hold he had on that 2-point conversion against the Steelers last year was one of my favorite things I've ever seen. Or I don't know if it was on the, I can't remember if it was the 2-point conversion or the touchdown that would have set it up. But that was, you know, beautiful because he does it all the time and he's not technically a sound offensive lineman at all. But so if they can give him the third downs, you know, Clowney Mercer Sam's success against him. You know, hopefully Watt is rushing from the interior more. He can do some things. And he's had success against Kansas City in the past on the outside too. So it's gonna be fun in that regard. So what's your prediction for this game, BFD? Who do you have winning this one?
I will say that I do have the Chiefs winning this one. I have them winning this one 34-27. And before we, you know, why does the masthead always have to be so negative? This is going to be our first real challenge. And kind of this glowing post Deshaun Watson kind of era that we're in now, that the Chiefs are just a really, really tough matchup. I think they're the only undefeated team in the league. They have been playing well on both sides of the ball. They've got the top-ranked offense in the league right now by DVOA. This is no pushover of a team, and it's going to be a tough go. I say 30-27. The 27 points is the most points I've probably predicted for the Houston Texans in 40-something games, maybe. So, you know, this is a different team now, and so there's at least a hope there. But, you know, against New England, we were playing a great offense but a really horrible defense. Against the Titans, we were playing a mediocre offense that ran the ball well against a pretty crummy defense. So this is going to be the first real difficult matchup since the Jaguars game for Deshaun Watson. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have Kansas City winning 24-20. I think it's pretty close. I think it's the one-possession game. I think, you know, Watson is really good, and the fact that even if they lose the one possession, that'd be, you know, a really great performance. But also, don't listen to me. I'm 0-4 right now in picking these Texans games. I have them losing. I have them beating Jacksonville and then losing to New England and Cincinnati. Well, I guess I'm 1-3 because I picked them losing to New England, but I picked them to lose last week and they end up winning. So don't listen to anything I have to say whenever it comes to picks this year. This team is changed so much so quickly that I'm like our brains haven't evolved to be used to not only the television but the internet and cell phones and everything. And so my brain has not evolved to be used to the Texans being a good football team like this, especially offensively. So I don't know what's going on at all. They're making me senile. And so speaking of the passing of time, I'll do a better job next week, you know, going through and seeing exactly what our record is and stuff, and we can see who does the best job this year. Maybe you can win another Cecil Shorts autograph card. But going back to the passing of time, Uproot Texan asked us, are either of us history majors? So, BFD, are you a history major?
I guess at this point in my life, you know, I'm mid-40s, getting inching closer to 50, that I should just not really be surprised by stupid people, UT. I really shouldn't, and I know that. And you know, considering what, you know, the kind of the risks in my life when it comes to certain things happening on a national scale, that I'm a little bit more lashy than I used to be. But sometimes you see something just so dadgum stupid, it just makes you gape in awe. And I will tell you, UT, my answer is no, I'm not a history major. But yes, one of my minors was Russian culture or something like that at UT. I can't remember what it was called now. It was American culture and Russian culture. So it must have been like Russian culture at UT. So there you go. I had 18 hours in Russian literature and Russian history as an undergrad at the University of Texas at Austin.
I'm not a history major, but I've listened to like 12 episodes of hardcore history, the best of which is the World War I one. And I was driving back from Maine to D.C. with a friend of mine, and I don't think I talked to her really at all the entire drive back because I was just, like, bent over the steering wheel just listening to this and, you know, couldn't get over it at all. But, yeah, that's – and I've read, I guess, a book about the Civil War, and so that's all the history I have in me right now. So, no, I'm not a history major. The other question we have here is from Lawrence Person. If we had Deshaun Watson run the offense in previous years, what did previous wide receiver draft picks like Devere Posey, Keyshawn Martin, and Jalen Strong look like busts? What do you think, BFD?
it's a fun question. I appreciate that question, Lawrence. That's interesting. I think Devere Posey is kind of an outlier in this question because he got hurt. He tore his ACL against the Patriots, and he was never the same player afterwards. So he kind of right helm off a little bit to injury, but he hadn't done much until the end of that season, right? Keyshawn Martin was going to be a bust from day one. He's one of the all-time worst picks in draft history for the Texans. We've got to stop taking these, you know, Keyshawn Martin was a guy who wasn't fast, wasn't quick, and we wanted him to be fast and quick when every measurable said he wasn't. And Jalen Strong, you know, at some point, I would like to see that, you know, players who smoke pot don't get in trouble for 4 weeks, I guess, is what I'd like to go. I think it's utter BS. So I think that Jalen Strong could be just fine as an NFL wide receiver if given the opportunity, but we still get hung up on these on little crap that doesn't really mean anything. The end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really see much in either of those guys back there because, like, Martin played in New England, and I think he called him once, but he wasn't any good there. Devere Posey, you know, you mentioned the injury, but even then, he was a talented guy. He had a really great catch he was doing in that playoff game, but that was one thing he ever did. Strong had, like, you know, three really important catches, but I just don't think he has it, you know, in between the ears, and I think he has problems, you know, getting separation. I don't think he was used outside at all. And so being a higher-round pick, maybe he'll do something, but I don't know. I just don't see it happening. And the last question here is from Rip Jersey, asking us if Brian Cushing will get his starting spot back when the season starts. I don't think so. I think Cunningham kind of has that spot locked up. He's tackling really well. He's a lot faster. I think whenever Cushing does get back, you may see him in goal line situations, short yard situations, those sorts of things. Down, but you won't see him, you know, star and play, you know, more than maybe like, you know, 30 snaps a game. And it's not the worst in the world. The defense looks a lot quicker and better on. There's some passes like out to the sideline, the flats to linebackers and tight ends than they have been before in the past.
Yeah, and I know Rip's a big Brian Cushing fan, and that's fine. But Cushing hasn't been good in years. He just really hasn't. Zach Cunningham is far superior right now. Where we need the most help from our linebacker spot, especially that middle linebacker along with McKinney, is we need somebody who can cover backs out of the backfield, and that's not Cushing. That's Cunningham at this point. So I would not give him his spot back. I'm not saying it's a punishment for him roiding up again, but I would say it's just the better guy is out there in Zach Cunningham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the redundancy of skills is a big part of that conversation, that question. So both McKinney and Cushing are similar, except McKinney's better than Cushing in every way, and then Cunningham offers a little bit different bit of a player. So, anyways, thank you guys for listening live. Everybody listening live, thank you guys for all the questions. I should say thank you, everyone. I assume maybe some of you are women because I know our stats that Blog Talk Radio gives us. I think we're like 55% male listeners and like 45% female, I think. But the kids don't like us. You know, the kids who are like, you know, I think it's like 16 to 24, they don't listen to us at all, but everybody else does. So we need to get the kids listen to Battle Red Radio, BFD. We need to do a better job of that. But anyway, thank you for the questions, everybody. Thank you for being on live tonight with me, BFD, and recording the show. We'll be back on next week at Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central time to talk about this game and the upcoming Browns game as well, too. So until next week, my name is Matthew Weston. Thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio.
I thought it was pretty good.